Yeah, thanks, Bree, for sharing your story. I always appreciate every week when students are being vulnerable and sharing a bit of the unique way that God has worked in their lives, because God is working uniquely in each one of our lives, and your story matters. So thank you for sharing. If you haven't already, you can turn on the speaker view, and that will help you over the next 20, 25 minutes here. So we've been doing a series this month titled Living as Digital Exiles. And the theme, the idea is, hey, we're living in this digital world, and we live in a time when search algorithms, educate us, and we look to our cell phones to entertain ourselves. And unfortunately, here we are in a pandemic and living our lives in front of a screen a lot these days. And my hope in this series is just to help you kind of figure out, hey, how do we thrive in the season of life that we're in? How do we thrive in our Christian faith? How do we have resiliency in our faith in the midst of living in the culture that we live in and living in the challenges that we live in? And so tonight I wanted to talk us to have a conversation and think about this idea of digital anxiety and our mental health. And so I've invited a guest tonight. Her name is Melissa Hallman. Hey, Melissa.
Hello.
Melissa is a mental health professional. She specializes in substance use education and mental health education. She has both a bachelor's and a master's in social work. But more importantly, she's married to an amazing guy. She has three wonderful daughters. She attends my church, and she came into my life because she is friends with my wife. And man, Melissa, I was just thinking about it. It's like you're one of the first people I met, I think, when we first moved to Kelowna. I remember Andrea, we were our newborn, we had Asher, and I think you had were recently had a child too. And I remember the two of you guys just hanging out and commiserating. So we've survived 10 years already. Let's keep
It's
going.
true, hey? That's
Yeah, that's
awesome.
right. Yeah. So anyways, so excited to have you come and share a bit with our group tonight. So tonight we're going to do just a bit of kind of like conversation dialogue. I'm going to interview Melissa, and she's going to help educate us in this topic. So Melissa, I mentioned that you have a bachelor's and a master's degree. You're surrounded here by a bunch of students who are pursuing their academics and trying to figure out their vocations. Would you share with us just a little bit about your career and kind of your passion and your interest in this work that you do?
Yeah, well, thanks. I've been a social worker for 13 years, and I work in a medical field. So a lot of people don't really probably know what that means, because half the people that I work with often don't know what that means. So I'll give you kind of like a little picture of what I do. So I've worked historically in hospitals. And often my job was supporting people kind of like on the one of the worst days of their life. So whether it was supporting family members whose loved one had been in a car accident, or helping people that maybe kind of have lost everything apply for housing or finances or do some grief counseling. And about 10 years ago, I started focusing my work into mental health. I have a family member who struggles with depression pretty significantly, and I think that I see him in so many people that I help in my work. And I just think, I love humans. And so I think that often the people that I work with, such a reflection of the fact that we could all be in that space if we had, different life circumstances. And I think that it's one of the greatest honors of my career is to meet people where they're at and love them and help them see that they are lovable. And in the last 3 years, I've started working in substance use has been my specialty. And what an incredible space to be. I think that sometimes people are a bit afraid of substance use treatment, but for me, it's like I get to go to work and hang out with substance use clinicians and teach them how to do their job better. And so much of that is about just helping people be able to see the humanness of each other.
Excellent. Awesome. It's good to hear a bit of that, of your story. So talk to me a bit about mental health. What is mental health? Why are we talking about this so much these days? Why is that important?
Yeah, I think it's funny because if we were having a conversation about physical health, you probably wouldn't be like, okay, what's physical health? Because we all know what that is, right? So mental health is a part of our overall health. It's something that all of us have. It is, sometimes people like will say mental health and they're like use mental health and mental illness synonymously, like they use it in the same way, but they really are different things. So I actually have a definition for you guys, from mentalhealth.gov, and just to keep myself on track, because like Bree, I could just talk about all kinds of things for the entire time. So they just define mental health as mental health includes our emotional, psychological, and social well-being. It affects how we think, feel, and act. It also helps determine how we handle stress, relate to others, and make choices. Mental health is important at every stage of life. And it's really important for us to understand that mental health is determined by a lot of different factors. Some of the factors that they list as part of this definition, they talk about our biology. So we can think about our genes, our brain chemistry. They talk about life experiences. So whether you've maybe experienced traumatic events or whether you've grown up in safety. And they talk about family history of mental health. And I include in this definition factors around environmental and societal factors. So really thinking about what's going on in the world and how a society reacting to that can really affect us.
Excellent. That's super helpful. It's funny because I think in our culture right now, we're becoming more and more aware of the importance of this. And I love that this generation, these students are growing up kind of like this is something that's in their vocab and they're much more aware of it. I think maybe when you and I were growing up, this we didn't talk about this and we didn't have language for it. And it was difficult to name it. And so even how you clarified too the difference between mental health and mental illness, we probably only, you know, think about it in negative ways rather than positive ways. So that's really helpful.
It's true. We think about all like emotion, right? We think often about it in this polarized way too, right? That we think like, okay, it's okay if we have like this happy emotion or maybe content, but all the rest of them are kind of bad. And the reality is we're all full human beings. So we have a full spectrum of human emotions and none of them are bad emotions, which is like a bit of a mind warp for people sometimes to realize that even if you're angry, it's not bad. Your body's just expressing feelings. So it's an interesting way to frame, but you're right. I think people under the age of 25, way more educated and have way more language around mental health than I ever did.
Yeah. I have reverse mentoring going all the time in my job. I love it. I've heard you teach on this model of this of window of tolerance. Could you kind of help us with that and begin kind of helping us understand a little bit more about that?
I'd love to. So I'm going to screen share like a PowerPoint because I just think it's helpful to see the visuals. So I will tell you that the window of tolerance was developed by a psychiatrist by the name of Dr. Dan Siegel. There you go. It started it at the beginning for me because I can't use PowerPoint apparently. He's a psychiatrist. He's an author. He's also a lecturer or professor out of UCLA. And he developed this idea of window of tolerance. And I think it's a beautiful picture for us to understand how our bodies are reacting in times of stress, like right now during a pandemic. I will also say that I have two screens because I'm working on my work computer right now. So if you see me looking off to the side, it's because my notes are over here and I just want to make sure I get it all right. So We all have this window that we function best within. And we can see, like, the image here says that that is the window of tolerance. It's our optimal arousal zone. So we can think of this as the space that we think clearly, where we feel settled in our brain and our body, where we can react rationally, where we can connect easily with others, including being able to express empathy and communicate our feelings. It's the space where we are our best self. And throughout our day, we move like around within this window. The width of our window, so kind of how wide it is determined by a lot of different factors. And actually a lot of the factors that we just talked about with mental health, like biology and life experience, those things. And so we have this really interesting space, right? So we have the space where we function well. But in times of stress and distress, which is defined differently for every person, we might think of those distress and distress times as triggers, like, you know, it could be having a midterm. It could be the fact that we're all living in a global pandemic right now. When we have times of stress and distress, we can get kicked out of our window. We can get kicked out the top of our window, or we can kick to the bottom of our window. And that is determined upon our life experience and our biology. So when we get kicked out of our window of tolerance, our bodies disconnect from the part of our brain that thinks rationally, that can plan, can think forward to when the stressful thing is going to be over. And we don't really have a lot of choice about how our body reacts. We don't really have a lot of choice of whether we kind of go out the top or out the bottom. It's really important for us to understand and not blame ourselves about how we react during times of stress, because we don't really actually have a lot of control over what our bodies do when we're stressed out. So let's talk about what happens if we go out the top of our window. So the top of our window we call hyperarousal. It's dictated by our sympathetic nervous system, and we can think about this as our fight-flight system. So if we were going for a walk in the woods and we encountered a bear, our bodies naturally react, right? We're either going to try to fight or we're going to try to run away. And so our bodies can react the same way with stress in the world. So either it can be something huge, like you have a midterm, you know, that like there's big stuff going on. It could be something as simple as, I don't know, like there's no coffee in the house when you wake up. And our bodies can just like read that like it's a bear and they get really overwhelmed. So when we're in that top end of our window of tolerance, when we've been kicked out into that hyperarousal area, we experience anxiety, or maybe anger, rage, feeling terrified, feeling overwhelmed. And to other people, we might look aggressive or anxious. We might look emotionally reactive or impulsive, obsessive, maybe controlling. And I think, you know, back to kind of the beginning of this pandemic, you know, back in March and April, when we saw people like hoarding toilet paper and fighting over the last can of soup and buying all the meat in the store, or, you know, not being able to sleep, that was a lot of people living in this higher end of their window of tolerance. They were experiencing a lot of adrenaline and a lot of cortisol. The other side of our window, or the bottom end, is called hypoarousal. And so that's dictated by our parasympathetic nervous system. It's the way that we might also think of it as the freeze zone. So if we ran into a bear on our hike and we realized I can't fight a grizzly bear because I'm really not that strong, I'm actually not a very good runner, we might just freeze. And our body is incredible. It like will start, we'll have sort of like anesthetic effect. So we feel painless. we go to the space of being kind of more zoned out. So we would experience in this end of our window of tolerance feeling, maybe feeling a bit empty, shut down, disconnected. And other people, if they're looking at us, see us as being withdrawn, quiet, hard to reach, emotionless, inactive, and in this space, really unable to learn, relate, or engage. For a lot of people, they are finding that they have run out of adrenaline, and they are right down in this space right now in this pandemic. There was a whole article written about it, about surge capacity, if you guys want to read an interesting article about this. Really just talking about how in normal life, our bodies are developed to be able to go through short spurts of stress. They're incredibly made. But when we are in a situation that just seems to be lasting forever and ever, we just sort of run out of energy. And so if you're finding that like you're sleeping more, or like you're scrolling on your phone more, or you just want to eat garbage or, you know, sugar to kind of like get your energy up, that's, it's a normal part of how a lot of people are experiencing this pandemic. Certainly I was listening. So James actually invited me here because I had done a podcast with our pastor at our church, and I would listen to that podcast and I was like, man, that woman is like on top of things. She knows some stuff about myself. And then I was like, oh shoot. Like I couldn't spell the word loud today. So, you know, I think that it's so normal. It's a human experience, right?
Yeah. This is really helpful. And I think right now, like probably in our brains right now, we're starting, you know, I can see some people probably thinking like, oh, that, you know, I've experienced that top end, or I've experienced that bottom end. And as we talk about this, this is something you would have talked about before this pandemic. And mm-hmm. yet, as we talk about, you know, the space we're in, we know that this is one of those pressures and stresses that we're experiencing right now. What would you say in terms of, so what are our strategies for dealing with these challenges right now? Mm-hmm.
So I think here's a really neat thing. Our bodies were made to be able to regulate. And so, you know, sometimes we're going to be able to have strategies, and I'll talk about them in a minute, of like, if we're in our window and we start feeling like we're pushing towards the edges, here are some things that we can do to like try and stay in, or maybe even expand our window. You know, there's other things that I'm going to talk about around if we start feeling like maybe we're just putting a toe in. So like we still have that part of our brain that can kind of rationally think about what to do. But it's important to understand that there's going to be other times where we just are out of our window, and you can't control at that point how your body reacts to stress. So it's not like if I were having a total meltdown that you could just tell me to calm down, Melissa, and I could just do that. Because our bodies aren't built that way, right? So first of all, to understand that our bodies have incredible ways of regulating themselves. And so if we are feeling really out of control and we just need to have like a big ugly cry, that's part of our body's regulating itself. If we feel like we need to move, part of the way our body's regulating itself. If we feel like we need to sleep, again, regulation. And another really important one is around connection, healthy connection. Sometimes when we're in this space of like either feeling really anxious or feeling really shut down, we can sometimes be drawn to people that are in that same zone. And that actually isn't helpful. As humans, we have this thing called mirror neurons that really help us be able to regulate off of people around us. So if I were to show up to a situation, maybe you have a midterm tomorrow, you're really anxious, and I can come and be calm and cool. I don't even have to say the right thing. I just have to be in the room with you and be able to just be that calm presence. Our bodies actually respond to that and can actually calm down. It's such a cool thing of how we're made.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It makes me think of like at times that it can be both a positive and a negative thing, right? If we as for students, if you hang out with the friends who are having the same midterm and you're all anxious, it could just bring that anxiety up. Whereas if maybe hanging out, maybe you want to choose to hang out with the friends who you know will actually say, you know, chill words, or they themselves aren't in midterm season, they're done there. So those are the people you want to, is that what you're kind of talking about too? Like how relationships play a factor?
Yeah, it's a huge piece of it, right? Because we're like regulating off of each other all the time. And I think it's a really neat thing to watch. So working in the hospital, I often will work with people that were, you know, in a space of great distress. And early in my career, I would try to like say kind things and rationalize and try to help them like argue these negative thoughts. And I've come to realize in my career that when people are in great spaces of distress, the most effective thing that I could ever do with them is just sit with them. Mm-hmm. And often they will just calm down. And it's the coolest thing to watch. Sometimes I feel a little bit like a magician, because it's like, you just are like, this shouldn't work. And it does. It's very cool. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Cool. Very cool.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about some other strategies though?
Yeah. Let's.
Okay. All right. Wait a second. I want to talk to you first about, you guys are all like going to school online right now, right? So can we talk a little bit about that before we get into strategies? Is that okay, James?
Yeah, totally.
Okay. So I think that it's really important to have this as part of this conversation, because first of all, you need to understand that virtual learning, if it's done in the right way, can actually be incredibly effective. Like I was reading an article this week that says, that told me that virtual learning can be up to 600 times more effective than in-person learning, which is bananas, as long as it's done kind of right. So if you're in a space where you're like, I'm never going to learn anything, I'm out of my window of tolerance, this is never going to work for me, just know that there actually is some incredible research that says that virtual learning can be really amazing. I think it's important for us to recognize that a lot of you did not choose this though. And that can make it really hard, because it feels like people have taken our choice away. I think that it's really important to recognize that we are now experiencing this phenomenon of Zoom fatigue, which I don't think anybody had ever talked about before this pandemic, but it's the idea that, you know, we are connecting on Zoom right now and you can see that I'm talking to you, but there's micro discrepancies between what is happening in real life and what is happening, what you're seeing. And your brain is incredible. So even if you're like, well, it's not that bad, like I can get over the glitchiness of it, your brain is always trying to calibrate the difference. And so it's exhausting. The other thing that happens when we're learning virtually is that we really try to multitask. And there is not a human that is good at multitasking. We've all just like been sold this lie that multitasking is something that we should be good at. We're not, no one. And then the other thing that happens is that it's really easy to get distracted. Especially when we're already feeling exhausted and your professor's just like droning on and your cell phone is sitting right here and you just want to know what's happening on Instagram.
Pause and let's do a real live test right now. How many of you have been multitasking right now during this talk? Confession time, anybody? No.
The funniest part is when James and I talked about, like we had talked before this, I was driving while talking to him. He's like, are you driving? I was like, well, so no one's perfect.
Yeah. I used to think I could multitask, and then I've learned, and I've also read the books and realized it is not true. It is not true.
No.
Yeah.
And then I got to tell you one more thing. So, and you guys, I think probably have already had this conversation because James referenced this at the beginning, and the social dilemma is like a really big show right now and it's amazing. But I just want to remind you that when we are talking about anxiety and mental health, that social media is not our friend. It's so cool and has amazing ways that you can connect with people. But there has been some research that has been coming out around social media for the last couple of years. And so one thing we now know about social media is that it is set up to be incredibly addictive. It gives us dopamine hits, which we would also see in people that are using illicit substances or, you know, they're gambling. You're getting that same hit of dopamine. And dopamine is an incredible neurochemical. It's a really important, it's one of kind of like our happiness chemicals. It's in this suite of chemicals along with serotonin and oxytocin and endorphins. But the thing about social media is that we're only getting hits of dopamine. What we are missing when we think we are connecting is that we are not getting oxytocin. And oxytocin is this incredible neurochemical that we can think of as like our love chemical and our connection chemical. It's the one that makes us feel like we're seen and like we are loved. And it is considered to be an antidote for depression. And so just knowing that when we are connecting solely on screens, we are not getting that same level of oxytocin. Now, I tried to find research around Zoom and oxytocin, and it's just, we're not there yet. Like there's a lot of research that's happening right now in this pandemic. I think it's better than like just, you know, going through people's feed or watching everybody's Insta stories, but it's something to be super aware of. So, I mean, there's lots of research out. I can tell you about one quick study that was done in Pennsylvania, and they had kind of two groups. So a double blind, or no, it wasn't a double blind, but there's two groups. So a control, and then they had another group that cut their social media down to 30 minutes a day. And at the end of that study, those people that had cut down their social media use to 30 minutes a day had lower rates of depression, anxiety. They were feeling more connected. And so it's just an important piece to keep in our minds when we're thinking about balance, especially when so much of our lives are online right now.
Excellent. That's helpful. It's funny, when I think of social media, I think of Facebook, Instagram, those kind of things. But entertainment like YouTube, you know, I often hear of students who are like, I don't watch Netflix or I don't watch, you know, traditional television in that kind of way, but YouTube is the new television and it's designed, it's designed to be addictive as well now, right? It's like you watch this short little video and another one pops up and another one pops up and another one pops up. And I've heard of, you know, of people just going down the rabbit hole for hours and hours upon. And I guess TikTok is probably becoming another form of that,
like,
as well, right?
So highly entertaining, but just like recognize how you're using it. So if I'm going to go do it, what do I need to do so I actually can turn it off? Because I'm terrible about turning off my, like if I'm watching Insta stories, like my husband's like, are you just watching commercials? Because there's people talking about like products. And I'm like, oh yeah, I guess it's sort of what's happening. But my part of my brain that is rationally thinking is just sort of turned off for that time. So, you know, figure out a strategy around it. Set a timer, or, you know, have your phone set that timer that says you're out of time on this social media app. So it's just, it's something to really be thinking about.
Yeah. Is that all you wanted to say about those things? Did you want to talk about strategies next? Yeah. Is that what you're
getting? Yeah, let's talk about some strategies.
All right.
So I thought I'd talk about strategies kind of in two different ways. So I thought I would talk about kind of some general strategies to support mental health and mental wellness, and then give you some specific strategies around grounding. Does that sound okay?
Excellent.
Okay. So we sort of talked about this a little bit already, but you know, during this time, it is totally okay to take a break from media, from social media, to unfollow things when we recognize that we are feeling anxious and things feel out of control. This was maybe even a little bit more applicable at the beginning of this pandemic when we all like Dr. Bonnie Henry suddenly became a household name that no one previously knew her when people were consuming so much information. But I think that there's still a real danger in us consuming information and consuming information from sources that just aren't reliable. And so if you're going to consume media, just be recognizing where the sources that you're getting your information from. Like if you're looking for information, say, on the COVID pandemic, go read the information from the BC CDC, the BC Disease Control, right? Center of Disease Control. They know their stuff. And so you know that you're not going to get this watered down version. You know you're not going to get this version that's all about shock and awe, because that's often what our highlight reels of our news is these days, is about trying to make us feel anxious and out of our window of tolerance often. Something for you to consider when you're doing school online right now: when you have breaks, take them away from your keyboard and away from your devices if you can. Like, I know my entire work right now is virtual. It has been for about a year. And when I am done work, I'm exhausted. And so we all need to recognize that we need more breaks than we do when we're attending school in person. We need to have different breaks. We need to be outside more. You know, it's really incredible if we can get outside and actually breathe fresh air. We need to be engaging in that incredible sharing at the beginning, talking about self-care. And I think that we historically have thought about self-care as like, go have a bubble bath, eat a bar of chocolate, and watch a terrible movie. Maybe that's not everybody's version of self-care, but the reality of self-care is so much more than that. So self-care is often really about attending to the things that need to be done so that you actually can experience less stress in the rest of your life. So self-care for me before I go to bed tonight is going to be to put the dishes in the dishwasher so that when I get up, I'm not just surrounded by chaos. It also includes things like making sure you're getting good nutrition. When you are in a space where you feel kind of shut down, it's easy to grab whatever junk is around, and that is terrible for our regulation. We need a balanced diet full of protein and, you know, carbohydrates and vegetables and all those things, super important for our self-care. Sleep, incredibly important. Not only that you're getting enough of it, but that you're not all over the place with it, that you're not up till 3 o'clock in the morning one day and then up at, you know, 5 a.m. and then you vacillate all over the place. Trying to keep some sort of routine around sleep is really important. I know it's not always realistic, but as much as we can to pay attention to, are we getting good sleep? And then exercise. And I'm not saying like crazy intense exercise. This could be like going for a walk. It's just about being intentional about moving our bodies. These are really important things around maintaining our mental health. If you went to go see a counselor, one of the first things that they're going to encourage you to do is to start exercising in some capacity. Because those things, sleep, nutrition, exercise, incredible pieces of how we can maintain ourselves in our window of tolerance.
Yeah, I think at this time, you know, normally students are on campus, they're walking across campus to go to classes, they're, you know, going to see friends, and the amount of physical activity that is just built in without being conscious of it is now lost. I found that for myself as well too. Like normally I'm tramping all over campus, but now I can actually be at home all day and realize, wow, I haven't gotten out of my chair. I've been in my chair for hours.
Yes.
And these kind of things and routines, like what you're saying about routines, is that a lot of the time routines come on us without us thinking about it. They're just there. And now more than ever, do we have to pay attention to our routines and really establish them for ourselves. It's definitely a time where we have to be more intentional about actually establishing things.
Totally.
Just happening to us. Yeah.
Yeah. Because if you're a procrastinator, you're going to procrastinate way more than ever right now, right? Like you actually need to set aside the time to do the homework. Otherwise it's just not going to get done.
Yeah. And because of our social spheres have shrunk, as well, right? Like normally, like I think of my wife actually, and you know, a number of her friends will say, let's go for a walk, but those number of friends have decreased right now because of COVID. And, you know, and you guys might be experiencing those kind of things too, where maybe you're not an initiator in your life, but you have friends who have been, but now you're not around them, or they're, you know, not able to be close to you now. And you're missing that, you know?
I think, yeah, it's such an important piece of it. And it's funny because when I was kind of like thinking about these strategies, connection with real humans is such an important part of it. But we also are like in a pandemic right now and we can't see all our people. And so trying to think about the people you can see, the people you are bubbled with, if that's your family or whatever, how do you actually spend time connecting with them as part of a strategy to support your mental wellness, and not just like sitting beside them on their phone, because that's how often I'm guilty of that all the time, but how do you actually spend time truly connecting? Because that's what's going to get you that oxytocin. That's what's going to, like, you know, get us in a happier space.
Awesome. Is that all you want to talk about in terms of strategies you want to talk about? There we go.
Can I just give you a couple
more?
I know I think I'm going to go over time. I've seen them. I love chatting. Okay. I wanted to offer you two grounding strategies. So this is a really important space. So if we feel like we're getting to the edges of our window of tolerance, we can employ these grounding strategies to kind of help us. It's really important to recognize that any strategy you learn, you have to practice it when you are inside your window of tolerance. Otherwise, you will never be able to access it when you're outside your window of tolerance. We need to build neural pathways to be able to use new things. So I'm going to teach you two. We've talked about connection and mirror neurons lots. So I'm going to teach you these other two. So the first is anchoring. And so the idea of anchoring is like a boat when it's in the middle of a storm. It cannot stop the storm from happening, but it can drop anchor so that it doesn't get swept away in the storm. Same thing when we are in the midst of stress or an emotional storm. No strategy is going to get rid of emotion. Sometimes we try to use like strategies to get rid of emotion, and it's just, emotions are normal, healthy parts of being a human. But it'll help you be able to not be swept away by them. So I'm wondering if you can practice them with me so that I don't feel like an idiot, not just James, everybody.
Let's do it.
I made my husband do this last night and he said, oh, I actually feel much better. So surprise. So the first part around anchoring is that if you feel comfortable to close your eyes or even just like look down, and just take a moment and kind of check in with yourself. Notice if you have, you know, if you're feeling any emotions, if you can put a name to them or even feel where you feel them in your body. Just take a minute and notice that. And then I want you to sit up straight. It's always the moment when I realize I never sit up straight. Sit up straight and push your feet into the ground. If you're sitting with your feet not on the ground, push your legs into wherever you're sitting. And then with your back straight and your feet pushed into the ground, I want you to open up your eyes and just take a look around the room that you're in. Maybe, you know, notice the color that the walls are, or if there's a picture on the wall, what is it of? And then we come kind of back into the room. And if there's somebody else that's here, if it's me and on Zoom or whoever, kind of connecting. So this is a really interesting strategy because it does a few things. First of all, it helps us notice what's going on in our bodies, which we rarely take time to do. It actually grounds us by pushing our, kind of like bringing ourselves back into our physical body. And then it helps us be able to kind of ground back into our space, because sometimes we get into like that zoned out place where we stop actually realizing what's even going on around us. So it's a neat strategy. I try to use it. Maybe you can use it while like you're professor's lecturing and you realize you can't hear him anymore or her anymore, it's a neat one to employ. And then the second one, I just wanted to offer you a breathing technique. So such a cool thing about breathing and our bodies. Our bodies are designed, when we breathe out in a long, slow breath, we actually activate our parasympathetic nervous system, actually can bring us down from that fight or flight zone and help us re-regulate. And so I'm just going to, when I teach this, I often will talk to teenagers when I teach them. It's like blowing out a birthday candle. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a deep breath in and then a long breath out like you're blowing out a candle. Okay. So breathing in and then out through our mouth. And sometimes we do that a couple of times. I do that a lot when I'm parenting my three daughters. They always want to know if that's how I breathe at work, and I don't. Much more at home.
I do this exercise with each of my boys when I'm putting them to bed to get them to begin to calm down, think about sleep. And I've started to practice this now when I get really frustrated with my children. Because I hear Andrea saying, breathe.
Yeah, we hold our breaths when we get overwhelmed, we hold our breath. Very interesting. One other thing I wanted to make sure that I said tonight, because I know we are running way out of time, but if you are looking at all this stuff and you're feeling like, man, I do all those things already, or I've tried them all and I just am not doing well, just recognize that mental health is so different for every person, and that sometimes there's going to be times and spaces where we need more help. And, you know, reaching out for that help is just a sign of really an incredible amount of strength. And there is spaces, I think, on campus you can probably reach out. But I also wanted to just share with you this resource, which is a bunch of different helplines or spaces you can call. Also, connecting in with a family doctor or phoning 811 are great places to start. So I think that's, yeah.
Thank you so much, Melissa. I'd like to end with two things. One, I want to give you guys, you students, a chance. If you have any questions, you can fire them into the chat right now. There might be something that you wanted clarification on, or maybe you had a particular question about some of the things that Melissa has shared. So I want to give you that opportunity just in case. And while you're thinking about those questions, if you have any, Melissa, I wanted to give you a chance first to just share anything that you would feel that you'd want to share with this group, that any word of encouragement or anything that you think that would be pertinent and relevant to them at this time in the season that they find themselves in.
I mean, I'm sure that you guys have been told this a lot of times, but right now you are living through history. And I think that this is the weirdest time of my entire life. It's probably going to be the weirdest time of your entire life. And I think that really paying attention to what's going on in our world and ourselves and learning how to love ourselves is going to be one of the greatest lessons, hopefully, of this pandemic. If someone had shared earlier about like, it's so easy to love other people, but actually spreading that love to myself can be so hard. And it's so true, right? That it's a real skill. But I'm hoping, you know, I'm hoping that you're walking away with a few more tools to be able to do that, and understand why it's important. Yeah.
Awesome. So true. So true. Well, thank you so much for just walking us through that, helping us understand ourselves better, and then also giving us some strategies of even, you know, what are some really practical things we can do. So thanks for that so much. I don't see any questions here. Is everybody good? Oh, here we go. We do have one question. Could you elaborate on the differences between mental health and mental illness?
A great question. So I've seen it described two different ways, and so I'm going to give you both because you can decide which one makes more sense for you. I've seen that mental health described on a spectrum, and so really mental health is our baseline well-being, and mental illness is part of that spectrum. So then we can think of like mental illness as having, I don't like the word poor mental health, but sort of this end of the spectrum where things are not going well with our mental health, and the other end where maybe we are feeling really mentally healthy. But the thing is that I feel like that explanation is a bit simplistic because I know a ton of people that struggle with mental illness that actually engage so much in activities to support their mental health. And so I think that it's a bit tricky, right? But they're not the same thing. So mental illness is, you know, really a diagnosable mental health concern that's going on for us. Overall mental health and the ways and the strategies that we try to support mental health kind of underlays that, I guess I would say. Does that make sense?
Another question we have here is, just talking about how since COVID, they've felt their social anxiety has increased. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts about why that might be happening?
Yeah, I think it's really common that's happening. So like, think about if you already were a person that kind of experienced anxiety, and now we have a global pandemic. So like, this is like everything that people with a lot of anxiety, sometimes this is what you're fearing already, right? And so of course you're feeling more anxious, your body is feeling more out of control. And if you're feeling like you have more social anxiety now than you did before, it's probably because we're living on the edges of our window of tolerance, or maybe even just over it. So it's really common, right? Like I have one of my kids struggles with some anxiety, and her anxiety is really difficult right now because we are living in this world of incredible uncertainty. And when we can't make sense of things, our body reacts in that fight or flight way or freeze. So it totally makes sense that you're experiencing more social anxiety. You're not alone in that. You're not abnormal in that. And you might have to test some of that anxiety or, even being here. This is a test of pushing the boundaries of that anxiety. And it's an incredible thing that you are.
Okay. Any other questions, guys? We have another question here. In your profession, how do you separate other people's problems from your own?
Early in my career, I was terrible at it. And I think I found myself eating potato chips for dinner because I didn't have any energy left at the end of the day. And I've come to realize that I need to take care of myself in ways that I would, maybe other professions wouldn't have to. I've also come to realize that I don't dictate anybody's life, right? Like I can give them a lot of strategies. I can build them up with as many supports as I can. But at the end of the day, I don't get to choose. And so it's kind of this really interesting balance, right? Where you get to pour into people's life, but you also need to protect your own mental wellness so that you can continue to do that job. Not an easy thing to learn, though. Certainly did not come naturally to me at all.
Yeah, I think that's true about a number of professions. Mm-hmm. And even just in relationships, right? And the problems our friends are going through, right? And mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
I think there's the analogy of like, if you're on an airplane and the airplane's crashing, they always tell you to put your own like oxygen mask on before you help anybody else. Same deal. Like if I don't put that oxygen mask on myself first, I'm just going to pass out and I'll be no good to anybody else.
Yeah, exactly. A little follow-up to that how do we help friends who are having mental wellness challenges. What are the kind of tips, directions that we should go with that?
I think that first of all, it's okay to just like be with people. Know that it is never your job to fix anybody. It's not even my job to fix anybody. And also just recognizing where your capacity is at, right? So you're not your friend's counselor. And so you're your friend's friend. So if it gets to a space where you feel like, I love you so much and I can't do this, then it's okay to get your friend to reach out for help. And you're not a bad person for saying that. You're not a bad person for feeling overwhelmed by somebody else's life. You get to be your friend's friend. And that's actually one of the most incredible things that you can do when your friends are struggling.
Yeah, well put. We talk about this with our leaders sometimes too, as well as that. And I think as Christians, we find that challenging too, because we feel this sense of that we're called to be people who are caregivers, right? Mm-hmm. As a sort of natural idea, but knowing the extent of which of our abilities is important. So your distinction there of like between a friend and a counselor, and that's what I would say too to some of our leaders as well, is like, you know, you're there to point people to Jesus and yet not be there, you know, you're not trained as a counselor. So you got to know when the extent of your abilities are and when to help, you know, point them to people who have other capacities and other skills.
And I think we sometimes do a terrible job of defining what a caregiver really is. Like, even if you think about a parent with a child, my job as my children's parent is not to meet their every single need. My job is to love them and to protect them and then to teach them how to actually be able to do things for themselves. That's a huge part of caregiving. Is actually being able to not just always be the person that cares and protects and never let anything bad happen to you. No, I need to teach you how to be in the world. And so same deal when we think about, you know, being called to be caregivers. It's not all just about the love and protection.
Now the questions are rolling. This is what happens now. We've opened the box. So the questions are rolling in now. Just for time's sake, guys, just so you know, we'll probably wrap this up after these two questions. So Victor asks about, you've mentioned the importance of connecting with family and friends that you're living with, but any suggestions for those who find themselves living alone at this time?
Such a good suggestion. So oxytocin is released by connecting with other people, but it's also released in physical touch. And so if we cannot be in a situation where we are connecting with other people, we try to find strategies, maybe like Zoom or FaceTime, to try and get some FaceTime with other people. But we also teach strategies around how to give yourself deep pressure touch. So I'm going to grab a scarf. That's why I'm rolling away from you. So if you find yourself in a situation where you cannot be around other people, if you have a blanket or a scarf or a towel or something like that, you can give yourself a hug. And so you wrap it around your shoulders like this. I actually teach people this like a few times a week. And what you're going to do, see if I can show you, you're going to grab it with either side like this and like this, and you're just going to pull. And so this deep pressure touch actually helps to release oxytocin, like getting a hug. It's an important piece.
Wow. Hug yourself.
Hug yourself.
Oh, that's awesome.
And not in like the way you did in like school where you pretended to.
Not anyway, that.
No, maybe you're all too young for this bad joke of mine.
That's all good. Last question here is any scriptures that you might, that you think might help with mental health?
I don't have any off the top of my head. Do you guys have one that you would share?
Oh yeah, exactly. Let's crowdsource this one. Yeah, I mean, the way I would answer that is this is why it's so important for us to know and study scripture, and even to the point of memorizing scripture, because that which we find that we've experienced God in, if we've had passages that have really illumined, you know, God's presence to us, it's like, that's why we want to hang on to those, because those, we want to bury those so that they come out when we're under pressure. You know, that whole idea of like, you squeeze an orange and what do you get? You get orange juice. Same thing, like when we're under pressure, what we've hidden away, what we've developed in our, you know, in our lives, in our quiet times, those kind of things, that's what comes out.
You guys are sharing so many of them. I like,
now they're coming. Yeah.
I like Megan's response. Just all of them. I'm with you. Yeah. Just all of them.
My favorite, which reoccurs in the Psalms a bunch of times, is be still and know that I am God.
Yeah.
And I would say that's probably the one that I go to the most when I'm feeling stressed or anxious. And then now what I'm going to do is I'll say that, and then I'll do one of these grounding exercises that Melissa shared with us tonight.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, there's somebody else in control of that storm.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for giving an evening to join us, Melissa. Thank you to your family. I bet you Ted's probably putting the girls to bed at this point. Fingers crossed.
Here's up.
Yeah, appreciate so much. So I'll pass it back to you, Rena, and we'll give you guys some time on the back end here to hang out with each other and just debrief a bit about tonight.